This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dafrin Johan. The Johor State elections took place last weekend. Barisan Nasional secured 40 out of 56 seats, a two-third majority victory. Pakatan Harapan won 12 seats, Muda 1 seat, and Perikatan Nasional 3. This is the third thumping defeat in a row for Harapan and its allies after Sarawak and Melaka. On today's episode, we take a closer look at the results and discuss what they could mean for our political landscape moving forward. Joining me on the show today to help me unpack everything is Kevin Zhang. He's a research officer at the Malaysian Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. Welcome to the show, Kevin. What are your overall thoughts on the Johor election results? Was it to be expected or did it come as a shock?
Thank you. I probably expected BN to win, probably around the low 30s. Maybe around 33. So definitely, them getting a huge landslide of 40 seats is beyond expectation. So I think there were quite a few favors that worked to BN's favor, especially towards the end of the election campaign.
Voter turnout in Johor was an abysmal 54%. Now, the caveat here is that every election that took place prior to the Johor State elections, required voters to manually register to vote at the post office, and the voter turnout, it's calculated based on registered voters only. So when we look at Melaka, it was 60-something% out of the registered voters. GE14, if it was 80%, it was 80% out of the registered voters. However, since the implementation of Undi 18 and automatic voter registration, pretty much every single adult in Malaysia above the age of 18 is now a registered voter. So with that in mind, Kevin, what does it signal to you that 45% of the adult population in Johor did not go out to vote?
I mean, it's probably not surprising given that the turnout for Johor is lower than Melaka. I think Melaka is around 65%. And Melaka, of course, happened before the implementation of Undi 18 and AVR. Right. So you would expect that, of course, Johor, because Johor has implemented these two schemes and there was an 800,000 increase in voters. So you would expect that Undi 18 only took up about 175,000, right? So you have the remaining 600,000 who, think about it, if they didn't vote in GE 2018, probably the bulk of these 600,000 voters aren't going to come out in this state election, because even many of the registered voters who did vote in 2018 didn't come out. But I do have to say that definitely 54% is on the lower end of the expectation, but it also presents really a lot of opportunities, you know, for parties moving forward to the next general election. And if I can just share some of the breakdowns, right? So I think people are very interested to look at turnouts and you know, why is the turnout dismal for this Johor election? But maybe if we take a step back and look at the numbers, that the number of votes that each party has actually received, both Melaka and Johor state election compared to 2018. How I try to look at this election is to look at basically the core or hardcore supporters of Barisan Nasional, Pakatan Harapan, versus the swing votes, or you call it the persuadables, right?
Right.
So if you look at Johor in 2018, BN actually had just below 600,000 votes. And in this recent state election, the number was almost the same. There was a slight increase of 10,000, right? So in other words, the supporters of BN in 2018, they turned up to vote in this election, right? But actually, BN really didn't get new voters to support them, or basically to convert the existing kind of, do you call it the swing voters, to support right. The BN cause. Despite the 800,000 increase in voters, right? So that's probably a warning signal to BN, right? Of course, on the PH side, we all know that the vote share for PH and dropped significantly from 800,000 in 2018 to 360,000 in the recent state election. So we can say that probably the hardcore supporters of BN is around 600,000 in Johor. PH is about 360,000, right? Perikatan is a bit harder to say because many of them might actually be protest voters. So how did this translate into actual share of votes is that basically BN has about 23% of Johor electorate as hardcore supporters. Pakatan has about 14%. Of course, PN got 12%. But even if you add up what is percentage from DN and PH, that means that there is close to almost 60% of the electorates in Johor who are, you know, undecided or swing voters, right? And this is where actually, if the turnout was higher, you know, you would see that this 60% could have gone either to BN, PH, PN, or maybe a future election not turnout.
Right. Kevin, do we have an indication of why turnout was low on your end? Is it because of the COVID-19 situation, or is it just that 45% or close to 50% of the electorate in Johor are just disenfranchised, they're uninterested, fatigued, or perhaps they just look at the political parties, what's on the plate, and say, you know what, none of this appeals to me. How do we sort of make sense of the low voter turnout in that sense?
Yeah, so if you actually look at basically this large group of persuadables or swing voters, right? And many of them chose not to turn out in this election. I mean, one reason commonly cited in the newspaper is that, you know, oh, because of COVID-19. But I mean, I was in Johor Bahru for the last couple of weeks and so end of the year. And really, if you go to the shopping malls, there's actually a lot of people, right? Of course, those there's a bit further away from city center, right? If you go to those shopping malls, there's actually a huge number of crowds there. So I really don't think that COVID is the real reason why people are not trying to turn out. In fact, one of the common, probably the most common discourse I get during conversations with people is, you know, it really doesn't matter who you select, right? With all the parties, at the end of the day, they are the same, right? There's really not much difference. You know, they are just interested in their own self-interest, promises they made, they can't seem to implement it anyway. So I think this sense of cynicism, right, is almost like the converse of what happened in 2018. And because the parties, all of them throughout the spectrum, has lost the trust of the electorate, therefore you see this election, almost half of the Johor electorate not turning up to vote.
Of low voter turnout is one thing, but regardless, the elections are done and dusted, and the winner is Barisan Nasional. Not only did they win, they won a super majority of 2/3, of the Johor State Legislative Assembly, which is 40 out of 56 seats. What does this victory for Barisan Nasional tell you?
Of course, at first glance, it would seem that Barisan Nasional had a landslide victory. They have a solid grasp on Johor, but really, if you look at the vote count, in terms of vote share, Barisan Nasional probably only got around 43% of the overall votes that were casted. Right. Of course, this doesn't mean that, some people would say that, okay, then maybe BM is pretty weak. But, let's not forget that in first past the polls, systems, including in, UK, actually it is pretty common for, party to win an election with only like below 50%, basically less than an absolute majority, but, you know, winning more than maybe even close to 2/3 in this, legislative assembly. So I would say that, this really reflects that, BN does have a solid grasp in terms of, being able to win seats, even though it might not win the hearts and minds of Malaysians, right? Because of the, particular first past the post, electoral system in Malaysia, right, where anyone who achieve a simple majority would be able to win the seat, unlike the proportional representation in other European countries, which if Malaysia had that, then the election results would be vastly different. But you know, given that this is what Malaysia have, and given the current political climate, as long as that large amount of, as what I discussed, that close to 50% of swing voters, you know, are unwilling to turn up, then HBN is going to do well in subsequent elections if the trend continues on.
The thing is, they still managed to get 43% of the vote share. It's not that they won 10%, 20%, 43%. I mean, it's 43% of Johorians, at least from these elections, still seem to believe in Barisan Nasional. Why did they garner this 43%? Is it a stability angle? Is it a strong manifesto? You know, how did the likes of MCA and MIC see a revival as well? Not just in the Johor elections, but even when we look at the Melaka elections.
Yeah, I mean, there's really quite a few angles to look at it. Maybe we should start first based on vote share. So actually Bridget Welsh did did very helpful in giving up a vote share of each parties. Mm-hmm. And I mean there's a lot of excitement or surprise, right, depending on where you stand about the MCA, especially winning 4 seats this time. But if you look at the vote share the MCA got, it's really not much of an increase, right? It's from 9.6% in 2018 to 11.2% this election. Basically, I mean only 2% of vote share increase, right? But of course, because of the decrease in turnout, therefore MCA could, you know, manage to win 4 seats. And the 4 seats that they won, you know, quite a stable majority, right? Right. I think also moving back to this idea that, you know, BN got 43%. Definitely, right, BN got 43% of the people who did turn out to vote. But across the whole Johor electorate, right, BN only got 23% of the support.
Right.
If you include those who didn't turn up to vote, which goes back to my previous point that honestly, it does seem that if you look at the trend from 2013, 2018 to the recent state election, the people who actually decided to switch parties to maybe the opposition 2018, those voters, most of them did not come back to BN's fold. Most of them just didn't bother to turn up. There is a subtle kind of warning lights from BN as much as they do seem to be performing well. Because if I could actually share some of the key seats that, you know, traditionally considered as BN's fixed deposit, right? So if you're looking at basically in the Eastern Johor side, you know, you have seats like Sedili, Panti, Gengaro. So these are huge Malay majority, right? Where Malays constitute at least 70%, if not higher. So, I mean, in fact, taken for example, Tenggaro, which is an MIC seat, there's been many Felda voters there, but this time around, BN won the seat, but only 49% of the vote share. The same could be said for, Panti and also Pasir Raja, you know, rural Malay seats on the east coast of Johor, and BN only got about 57% of the vote share. So this says that even in, BN traditional heartlands, you know, there's close to almost 40% of the people who did vote did not support BN, right? So that says that perhaps really, you know, the days of a sole Malay party that is representing all Malay interests, I don't think it's coming back if you look beyond the number of seats that BN has actually voted.
So let's switch gears and talk about opposition. Let's start with Pakatan Harapan. Now, while, you know, as you've pointed out, BN did not necessarily sort of grow in popularity. They just benefited right from the system.
Right.
Pakatan Harapan's vote share has definitely eroded. In 2018, the party, which at the time comprised of Bersatu as well, managed to secure 53% of the votes at the Johor State Legislative Assembly, winning 36 out of 56 seats. At Johor this time around, they not only merely won 12 seats, their popular vote also dropped to about 26%. Why has this happened?
Yeah, so if I can just add a bit more of a context, mm-hmm. right? So in 2018, Pakatan Harapan, of course, then you had Bersatu. They garnered 800,000 votes. And the recent election, they only garnered 360,000. So that's more than half, right? I mean, of course, some listeners may be saying, oh, maybe Johor is an exception, or maybe this doesn't represent a national trend. But I would like to caution that, you know, the same pattern happened in Melaka. In 2018, DH had 210,000, right, votes, whereas in the recent Melaka election, they only had 110,000. So basically the decline in votes that PH received, dropping by about half, seems to be across the board, you know, regardless which state you're in. Many of the supporters of PH, they are disillusioned. Perhaps they did went towards, as I've established, it's unlikely they actually went back to Barisan. Some of them might have went back to Perikatan, but many of them also did not turn up in this election, right, looking at the overall drop in vote share. But what is especially also a flashing red light for PH? So there's two levels to look at it. First is that in Malay seats, where Malays constitute more than 70% of the overall electorate. So that gives us a very good pattern on how Malays voted in this election. So essentially, of course, most Malay supermajority seats, BN won the seats. It is actually Perikatan that came in on the second, right? The first
right.
Right. And PH actually came in terms of the number of votes received at a distant third place, right? Mm-hmm. Much fewer than even Perikatan, let alone Barisan Nasional. And this So of course, this is just at the state level. But if you actually, I mean, the preliminary is still based on preliminary results. But if you look at the polling districts votes, that PH actually contested. So in many, so for polling districts that are, Malay majority, maybe 80 to 90%, right? PH only garnered about, I'm talking about the rural areas. PH only garnered about 10% of the Malay votes in rural seats for at the polling district levels, right? And the interesting thing is that even Prika Tan, who might not be the incumbent candidate was a PH person, but even Prika Tan garnered more votes than Pakatan in these basically Malay stronghold areas, right? And that really sends a signal that that perhaps the Malay voters who voted for PH now, you know, they are going towards Pakatan for many reasons, but I mean the numbers just seem to show this trend.
Right. So when we look at Pakatan's decline, what would you say is the cause of this decline? Is it poor performance while they were in government? Is it a matter of harping on the same messages? Although it's important, you know, to focus on 1MDB and Najib, but that was like sort of their primary narrative heading into the Johor state elections. Many have pointed out that they ignored bread and butter issues in the process. Why is Pakatan Harapan's support declining?
One key thing to understand is really that in 2018, PAS was by itself, but most of the time people selecting between either, especially in Southern Peninsula states, either PH or Barisan, right?
Right.
And of course, PH's messages back then was, you know, anti-corruption, clean governance, right? But what has happened with the rise of Prika Tan is that now you have also a Malay-based coalition that is also, you know, talking about similar messaging, you know, as what happened in the recent state election. Wee-Win's slogan was about Demi Bangsa Johor, right, for the sake of Johorians, right? And he was talking about the need to vote for PN for a clean governance, and how of course Muhyiddin had very public criticism of Najib, right, in the recent state election campaign. So really, if you're a Malay voter and you know, and if you're still attracted to you know, these anti-corruption messages, you feel that PN hasn't really reformed itself ever since 2018. I mean, now that you have Prika Tan as a Malay-based party who's fighting for Malay interests, but yet also campaigning for anti-corruption messaging, then I mean, maybe the choice is really clear why they have switched to Prika Tan. Really, the point is that, I mean, let's be fair, right? I mean, PH, you had 22 months in power, you promised about anti-corruption and how, under the assumption that because we'll tackle corruption, the cost of living will be going down, but in reality, apart from a 6% GST elimination, the cost of living really didn't go down much. Given that you already had a chance and you can't seem to live up to whatever you promised about anti-corruption, tackling the cost of living issues, there seems to be a logical explanation of why Malays will actually switch to Prika Tan.
So the question then is, does Pakatan Harapan need new leadership? We'll come back to that after the break. On the show with me today is Kevin Zhang. He's a research officer at the Malaysian Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Kevin Zhang. He's a research officer at the Malaysian Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. And we're doing a post-mortem on the recent Johor state elections. So Kevin, coming out of the Johor state elections, just as, you know, we did out of the Melaka state elections, there's been calls by many, whether it's experts, whether it is, people, especially on social media, if you look at Twitter and all, for Pakatan Harapan to change their top leadership. And, a lot of people talk about Anwar Ibrahim and Lim Guan Eng and how they need to step aside and let newer leaders, fresh faces, young people come to the fold. Is this how you are looking at it as well? Do you think Pakatan Harapan needs new leadership? Will that sort of excite their voter base and excite the people, the swing voters or the people that are sitting at home? Or is that a non-factor to you?
Yeah, I think you asked a question that really at a timely juncture, given that DAP, which is of course a key component of PH, will be having its party election next week. PKR selection was supposed to be happened, I think, in April, but it's been now postponed to May, but, you know, in 2 months' time, nonetheless. And, of course, even UMNO is having AGM just as we are speaking.
Mm-hmm.
The key question is really, what is the PM candidate that Pakatan Harapan is going to offer beyond just a leadership change? Definitely seems, I mean, if things seems to be going as it was, DAP will probably have a new leader, given that Lim Guan Eng is reaching the limits of his term limit, right? Of course, PKR, we don't know what, I mean, Rafizi just announced yesterday, was it 2 days ago, that he's going to join to the fray, right, contesting mm-hmm. for a vice president. But I would say that beyond the party leadership, the key thing is that after the party leadership, can the coalition actually agree on a credible and winnable PM candidate leading up to the next general election, which is expected to be held within the upcoming few months, right? So, and I will be, that there's, perhaps the question, the thing is that the DAP could, you know, have a new leaders and PKR maybe or maybe not, but it's really difficult for a coalition to agree on a PM candidate that is winnable and given that how, the parties are still pretty much helmed by veterans, right? Currently, it's hard for the coalitions to within the next few months, you know, go through the whole entire election process, select their own party leadership, and also as a coalition be able to agree on the PM candidate. I think that really the time and the runway for selecting a new PM candidate is really too short. And if they fail to, you know, have an inspiring PM candidate, then even if there is basically new and internal party leadership reshuffle, which is not guaranteed at the moment, particularly we are looking at PKR, then it's not going to have that much of a inspiration for the voters, right? Because at the end of the day, it is what poster boy you going to put up for the next year.
Right.
It's not about your individual party who is the president or chairman for that matter.
Let's talk about Perikatan Nasional, which has sort of made itself the second most viable coalition to many of the electorate. The interesting thing is many expected Perikatan Nasional to vanquish at the Melaka state elections, myself included, and that is absolutely a wrong prediction on my side, because they've not only managed to survive, but make themselves the second choice among many Malaysians, especially younger Malays. Now, what has Perikatan Nasional done right, Kevin? What are they offering that both Barisan Nasional and Pakatan Harapan aren't?
It's probably also important if you look back to 2018. So if you actually, based on the Saluran results, which means that for each polling station, it is, polling is done based on age group, right? So if you look at the higher Saluran numbers, which means that the younger voters, in G2018, PAS has actually performed better among the younger Malay voters than BN, right?
Right.
At least compared to the older Malay voters, PAS has been doing better in the younger age group. And therefore, it is not surprising also in this election that Perikatan did manage to secure a substantial share of Malay voters, particularly among the younger age group. But beyond the PAS factor, which, I mean, of course, we do know that Johor, after all, is not like Terengganu and Kelantan. Basically, the Abah Prihatin factor has also been strongly shaping Perikatan Nasional's narrative, given that Tan Sri Muhyiddin himself, you know, claimed to have presented many social and economic assistance towards for the Malay grounds and of course for all Malaysians during the COVID pandemic. And it's really the messaging itself that has been crucial and consistent across, right? So putting aside what we think about Tan Sri Muhyiddin, about his own personal background, the messaging of a clean and a caring government seems to be really attractive or substantially attractive, because now is a COVID pandemic. I mean, we're still facing the impacts of COVID pandemic, you know, especially the economic fallout. And compared to Pakatan Harapan, which is still sort of harping on 1 MDB 2018, Najib, and whatever the excesses, Pakatan seems to be more relatable and on the ground, right? Talking about how, you know, he has provided practical support to Johorians and post Malaysians in the last 2 years, especially when he was serving as PM.
Right.
And that kind of Prihatin message, if I frame it that way, it seems to be substantially attractive. And this is in spite of Perikatan's absence of grassroots for most seats in Johor. So we do know that Bersatu doesn't really have a strong grassroots machinery compared to BN or even KH, right?
I want to talk to you also about Muda. This was their first elections that they participated in. They contested in 7 seats. One of the seats they even went up not just against Barisan Nasional and Perikatan Nasional, but they contested with PKR as well, and that's the Larkin seat. Ultimately, they won one out of their 7 seats, Puteri Wangsa. What do you think of Muda's first outing? Did they successfully galvanize the youth to show up and vote? Did they bring a sense of excitement to the elections, or are they just, from your vantage point, just another party?
My disclaimer is that I haven't have access yet to the polling Saluran results, so therefore it's probably a bit premature now to say that whether has the Muda be able to galvanize youth in Puteri Wangsa Larkin or AC Johor as a whole, right, for the seats that they contest. But if you look at the results, let's, for example, for Larkin, Muda had 12.8%, PKR had 16%, and of course Barisan had 41%. So I would say that if anything, it does not seem at first glance, of course, that Muda has been able to create an impact. Because even for the seat of Larkin, even Perikatan campaigned under Bersatu managed to go in 25%, which is almost the combined percentage of both PKR and Muda, right? And given that Larkin has a pretty strong younger electorate percentage, it's probably unlikely that at least for Larkin, Muda managed to galvanize the youth and the young Malaysians to turn out to vote for it. Moving on to Puteri Wangsa, so this is where Amira won with 43% of the votes. Actually, Puteri Wangsa, the results also doesn't seem... of course, without the hindsight of PDM results, that Muda has managed to galvanize a younger force. And why do I say that? Is that Puteri Wangsa is close to about 10,000 electorate. And of course, Puteri Wangsa is also where, similar to Larkin, there's a large percentage of. So if you look at the numbers itself, this is across Johor, not just for Puteri Wangsa. Essentially, 18 to 21 takes about 6% of the electorate. But really the bulk of the electorate is between 21 to 40, right? That takes up close to half of the overall electorate. So assuming that this also applies to Puteri Wangsa. So we are really looking at Puteri Wangsa having at least about 50% of the electorate who are around below the age of 40 years old, and Muda under Amira got about only 22,000 votes. So it does not seem that Muda was really the this hype or force or this huge inspiration for the youth in Puteri Wangsa. But of course, this is just without the benefit of PDM results.
So with all of that in mind, Kevin, many have pointed to the fact that the combined votes of Pakatan Harapan and Perikatan Nasional were enough to defeat Barisan Nasional in another 18 or so seats. And this is what you've alluded to throughout this conversation, the idea of first past the post, the idea of Barisan winning a large majority of the seats despite only having 43% of the vote share and all of that. Then the next question that has popped up over the past few days is that this idea of what does the opposition do next? Should they consolidate even with Perikatan Nasional, despite Perikatan Nasional, being one of the architects of Langkah Sheraton? Do they just try and bolster their support, try and win over the people who are completely disengaged, don't want to show up and vote, and so on and so forth?
Of course, if you just go by the numbers itself, then it seems that Perikatan and PH should work together, right? But of course, not forgetting whatever saga that has happened in the last 2 years. And also, really, how different in terms of ideology is Perikatan versus Pakatan? One is a multiracial base. The other is a Malay-based coalition. Of course, you have Gerakan, but Perikatan is mainly comprising of PAS and Bersatu.
Right.
So, I'm really not sure whether they should come together to work again, given that all Malaysians have already seen what has happened, right, with Langkah Sheraton.
That's right.
The subsequent incompatibility between Bersatu and PH throughout the course of the last 2 years. The key thing to note is that really in first pass, of course, in overseas countries, let's say, for example, United Kingdom, winning based on just less than half of the votes, essentially just a simple majority, but not the absolute majority, is actually common in many UK constituencies. I would say that if you actually do manage to get more than 50%, that's a bit uncommon, right? At least in the UK example. So you could say that perhaps Malaysia is just moving towards, I mean, this over-catchy word, but the new normal, right, where parties would just win based on a simple majority, and there will be many players coming together to fight a tie. And really the idea of a 1v1 kind of electoral contest is perhaps has really, you know, it's not going to come back in the future, right? Actually, given that Perikatan or Pakatan, none of the coalition seems to be willing to change their ideology or their messaging and in order to seek a compromise solution.
Kevin, before we wrap this conversation up, do you anticipate general elections around the corner given the results of the Melaka state elections as well as the Johor state elections?
We probably have to observe what's going to happen within the UMNO General Assembly, which is taking place now over the next few days. So if the UMNO General Assembly gives a very strong resolution calling for PM to dissolve Parliament as soon as possible and, call for a general election, I think Prime Minister Ismail Sabri is going to be really between a rock and hard place, right? Because on one hand, it seems like he wants to, you know, fulfill his full term. But on the other hand, it is hard to be directly going against the wishes of the UMNO grassroots, given that UMNO party election is also scheduled to be held end of this year. So let's wait to see what UMNO AGM, whatever the resolution has been passed there, and maybe we can have a clear indicator. But maybe before I end off, is really the message is that, going back to your previous question on whether PM and PH work together. I mean, look, in this Johor election, there's close to, 45% of voters who did not turn up to vote for any parties. So instead of trying to think just based on these numbers and make some calculation, why don't each coalition, any coalition in fact matter, Barisan, Pakatan, Perikatan, look at, how is it being able to reach out to this group of, you call it swing voters or untapped voters, however you call it. And, just to focus on those people who actually haven't turned up to vote and to provide new inspirations and narratives to these group of voters. And I think this is what Malaysia needs, a new narrative to go beyond the political cynicism that's been so intense in the last few years. And only then, can you really have a path forward to engage the voters to bring back, democracy to healthy levels and also to avoid that kind of going back again to, working with your enemies just for the sake of winning power, right? Which is something that's only going to be more cynicism, in the leading up to the next general election.
On that note, Kevin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for the invitation to speak on BFM.
That was Kevin Zhang, Research Officer at the Malaysian Studies Program at ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can also check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.